Welcome to the Latchkey Tales, Book 2, Crowley Golden and the Isis Heart, a tale of Egyptian revival. Written and performed for podcast by MJ Hahn. Good evening. Welcome to episode 4, and thanks for tuning in. So, listeners, last time we were catching up with Yuki O'Malley. We followed her across town to DeVinter's old storage space, where she uncovered a few surprises in a crate marked Golden. Then, Audra Lamal paid a little visit to Bloom's Antiques, where she inquired about a DeVinter family artifact. It's from this point that our story continues. As we fade in, we find Audra speeding on her motorcycle through the Castro, where the main artery of Market Street begins to twist towards the lofty summit of Twin Peaks. Chapter 4, The Crux on Sada. Audra Lamal's motorcycle rolled to a stop in the center of the deserted Twin Peaks summit parking lot. At nearly 1,000 feet, the view from this particular vantage point was right out of a tourist brochure. A majestic panorama of the entire city stretched out below like a glowing, twisted electric grid. Yet Audra certainly hadn't come for the view. Earlier, it looked like it might have been a clear night. But now the grand vista was gradually being obscured by the drifting fog bank which had begun to creep over the mountainside. Audra waited patiently until she was eventually surrounded by the sauntering mist. There was a metallic clunk from somewhere up above, and then a moment later a railed platform silently descended. It landed with a dull thud on the asphalt, one of the railings clicked and retracted, and a short ramp extended automatically. Without blinking a false eyelash, Audra rolled her motorcycle onto the platform and gripped the guardrail while the little ramp raised itself and the railing closed automatically. The platform began to ascend and the engines of the enormous airship fired up. The fog bank suddenly seemed to adjust its trajectory and began to drift southward. Audra looked a little windblown as she disengaged her bony grip from the guardrail and then climbed off of the landing platform. She patted the top of her head discreetly, making sure that her wild blonde waves were still anchored firmly to her head. Audra flipped up the luxurious collar of her floor-length white mink that whipped around on the wind. High above, standing behind a bank of controls, a young man with long silver hair and a black cloak looked down with thinly veiled contempt.
"Welcome aboard the Epeiron."
He flicked a switch, and the immense outer doors of the airship thundered closed. Audra rummaged through her plush pockets until she found her cigarettes.
No smoking, remember?
Audra looked up, incredulous and scowling, with an unlit cigarette dangling from her lips.
Danilov, you've got to be kidding. But then I suppose this entire floating rat trap is already one colossal fire hazard.
No, he just doesn't like the smell.
Audra grumbled and tossed the unlit cigarette aside. She began a rather labored climb up the steep stairwell to the platform above. A small smile flitted across Danilov's lips while he watched poor Audra strain. By the time she reached the platform, she was wheezing like an old punctured set of bagpipes.
You boys really need to get a VIP entrance. I'm all for ambiance, please don't misunderstand, but isn't it all a bit much? What's wrong with a nice hotel suite?
Danilov's sly smile flickered. He turned and pressed a button on the wall, and the large brass bulkhead door suddenly slid aside.
I suppose it is a tad Jules Verne around here. But not to worry. We're en route to a discreet location, where we'll be landing shortly. Now, we should adjourn to the upper gallery. The maestro is anxious to speak with you.
They walked out onto a catwalk that was suspended over a long, narrow chamber. Crowded below were a variety of vehicles parked in neat rows, from shiny black limousines with tinted windows to nondescript delivery vans. Each was lashed down securely by a web of thick nylon straps. The catwalk vibrated with the dull, persistent thud of the airship's engines. Danilov motioned towards the distant elevator doors at the opposite end of the catwalk and took a stab at congeniality.
So, have you learned anything of importance? What did the little antique man have to say?
Audra's eyes narrowed and her smile curled impishly.
Oh, he told me a great deal. A great deal indeed. All sorts of sordid, salacious little details. Ooh la la, I nearly blushed. I had no idea the Baron was such a bounder.
Danilov suddenly went rigid. His gray eyes narrowed and frosted over.
You venomous old ghoul. Hold your tongue or we'll have it removed for you.
This threat had little effect on Audra. She rolled her eyes like Danilov was a clumsy dancing partner who kept tripping over her feet.
Old ghoul. Look who's talking. Danilov, you should learn how to play. You give in so easy. You're no fun at all. You should ask your big brother for a few tips. Clearly his savoir-faire doesn't run through every branch of the family tree.
Any discernible emotion had disappeared from Danilov's pale face. Quickened his steps towards the elevator doors, while Audra trailed behind, wearing a satisfied smirk. The atmosphere in the elevator remained somewhat glacial as they ascended. Gradually, the dull thud of the engines faded. After a short time, the elevator shuddered to a halt, and the doors opened to reveal a long, lushly carpeted corridor. From somewhere in the distance, the lilting piano strains of Chopin drifted on the air. On either side along the corridor, displayed behind sheets of glass, there was a sizable collection of priceless antiquities. Astrolabes, armillary spheres, and primitive sundials, all covered in a heavy patina of verdigris. There was scroll after scroll in ancient Greek, time-worn papyri written in Coptic and Aramaic, as well as several comprised of Egyptian hieroglyphs that burned with power and menace. While Danilov led the way, he removed his cloak with a dramatic sweep and folded it over his arm. Audra Tisk, noting his rather shabby casual attire, which consisted of motorcycle boots, torn jeans, and a grungy t-shirt. Danilov adjusted the heavy chain around his neck, making sure that the large golden ankh hung at the center of his chest. He looked back in an unspoken gesture for Audra to do the same. Lamal smirked, and with a well-practiced, skillful move, her white mink slipped casually off of her shoulders and nestled at her elbows, revealing a similar golden ankh resting next to her bony sternum. The corridor ended and opened out into a large, lavishly furnished 19th-century sitting room. A curved bank of large windows made up the back wall, though they afforded little in the way of a view. The night sky was completely blank and overcast by the thick blanket of fog which persistently clung to the Epiron like a shield. Several clusters of dimly lit formal seating were arranged around the room, as well as what seemed to be an unending collection of antique treasures. Most notably among the display had to be the enormous ruby that sat prominently twinkling in its place of honor. Seated at the grand piano in the center of the room was a peculiar, slender figure who seemed to be made entirely of gold. It had finely jointed gleaming limbs and nimble fingers that danced over the keys with eerie precision. A thick cable sprung out of the golden figure's back and snaked across the plush carpets to where it was plugged into a tall 1930s radio cabinet made of polished mahogany and detailed with intricate marquetry. Danilov and Audra had taken a few steps into the room when the golden musician turned its head slightly, regarding them while its skillful fingers continued playing uninterrupted. Danilov spoke in a formal tone.
May I present the High Adept, Anaximander?
Even Audra, who had been witness to quite a few strange things in her time, hadn't seen anything like this. Surrounded by a halo of golden curls, a finely painted porcelain mask of an apple-cheeked youth grinned back at them. Yet the fixed, light-hearted expression was strangely at odds with the mask's blank eye sockets that glowed with a pale blue-green light. Danilov motioned to one of the sofas near the radio cabinet and flopped down into an armchair. Audra looked over and then smiled at the sight of the small, silver-haired boy nearly hidden in the sofa cushions with his nose stuck in a large book. Upon hearing them enter, the boy looked up. A shadow seemed to cross his face, a dark expression which certainly wasn't that of a normal 5-year-old. And yet, despite the boy's murderous glances in her direction, Audra leaned over the back of the sofa and tousled his hair playfully.
Little Desmond, mon petit chou, comment ça va?
Little Desmond offered nothing in the way of a response. He merely glared, looking thoroughly vexed, and went back to reading his copy of Milton's Paradise Lost. The golden pianist had reached the end of the nocturne. As the final note faded, The blue-green light in its eyes dimmed until it winked out completely. The figure became inert and slumped forward with its hands dangling limply at its sides. Just as quickly, the antique radio came to life with an odd metallic crackle. A small light at the top of the radio dial began to glow with the same blue-green light, like a solitary eye.
Welcome to the Epiren, Sister Audra. I hope your journey here was not too taxing.
It took Audra a moment before she realized that the voice coming from the radio cabinet was waiting for her to respond. She paused awkwardly, confused as to where she should speak. So she just answered in the general vicinity of the radio cabinet.
No, it was fine. Thank you.
Excellent. Now, may I offer you some refreshment?
Muffled metallic footsteps approached. Audra spun around to see a trolley being pushed into the room by another burnished figure, this one made of relatively humble brass. It wore a blank face consisting of only two eye holes that glowed with the same eerie blue-green light. Even though it managed to operate independently of any snaking cables, it clearly wasn't as finely made as the piano player. It looked almost utilitarian, except for the intricate inscription on its casing, a black ankh over a circle of hieroglyphs surrounding a red five-pointed star.
Perhaps you are wondering about my Shawabdi.
Audra merely stood there, looking a little slack-jawed.
As in ancient times, a lesser spirit may be called into a temporary body. While it resides there, the caller's will is served. They're very useful for basic tasks. Domestics, mostly.
Audra noted that the Shawabti was offering a rather large shot glass filled nearly to the rim with a dark, oily liqueur.
Danilov has been gracious enough to share his private stock of sacred tea. A different variety than you may be used to. You may find it perhaps a bit harsher than Lady Ionaga's recipe, as he uses pure vodka instead of water for the extraction process.
Both Desmond and Danilov seemed to tense at the mention of Lady Iwanaga's name. They glared as Audra accepted the murky cocktail. She threw back the shot in one gulp and then winced with a pained grimace. After the initial shock, she smacked her lips with an odd look of recognition. Then her golden eyes flickered at Danilov.
Ugh, familiar notes of peace vinegar. You, the Vinther boys. Don't tell me you've got one of those little tentacle beasties tucked away someplace as well. You'd better watch out, Danilov. Desmond might try to steal this from you. Or perhaps not, eh, Desmond? Maybe you're finally young enough, yes?
Again, little Desmond remained quiet and seemed to ignore Audra's jibes, although his small fists were gripping his book so tightly that he nearly ripped it down the center. An odd metallic crackle from the direction of the radio cabinet drew everyone's attention back to the task at hand.
We are curious to hear about your interrogation regarding the stolen artifact.
Audra placed her emptied glass on the trolley as the blank-faced attendant rolled it away. With a grand sweep of her coat, she took center stage.
Of course, I am all too happy to be of service. But perhaps Danilov would have been sufficient to manage this little errand. In fact, I rather think Mr. Bloom would have been more inclined to share his expertise with such a handsome young man, without any coercion at all. Be that as it may, I did hear everything Mr. Bloom had to say.
Audra casually swung her blonde waves over her shoulder while she threw her fur in the direction of the divan. She failed to notice that it had landed squarely on Desmond, obscuring him completely.
The tiara was the only artifact of any power in the man's little shop. The rest was just an array of paltry objets. And although Mr. Bloom was certainly informed about the more sordid details concerning the Davinder family...
Here she flashed a wicked smile in the direction of Danilov and the buried form of Desmond.
I am certain that Bloom was not aware about it possessing any special properties at all.
The blue-green eye in the radio dial began to pulse.
Yes, I had suspected as much. We are no longer concerned with Mr. Bloom. However, this errant spirit thief, the blue-haired one, what do we know of her?
Audra smirked as Desmond finally managed to emerge from under the enormous white mink. He threw it to the floor and glowered, while Audra continued.
Oh, we know a great deal. We've run into this one before. Again and again, actually. That snotty little street rat from the 80s, Tina Bleberman. We have Desmond to thank for her.
It's not my fault. It was that blasted device. And I did vanquish her that one time.
Danilov snorted.
Vanquish? I shot her 5 times with the displacer, I'm certain of it. She disintegrated right in front of me, and then look what happened.
Desmond rolled his eyes, looking exasperated, and Danilov sneered. Audra positively gleamed with delight at the fraternal discord while Desmond's tiny brow furrowed.
I don't know how she does it. She always manages to fight her way back.
Well, give me another crack at her and I'll send her to a place from where she can't come back.
The pulsing eye on the radio dial began to grow steadily brighter.
This matter is of little concern to us. The artifact is of small consequence. Just another bubble for our collection. You must set aside your feelings, Brother Danilov. If the errant spirit thief shows herself again, we certainly have ample power to deal with her ourselves.
A wall of force seemed to emanate from the radio cabinet. As the words carried across the room, all egos were quelled and sarcastic smirks fell.
We now have 27 days to proceed. Brother Mortmain's skill as an artificer is unsurpassed. He has also made excellent headway on his task of acquiring access to the ritual site. And now that the land base has been conferred, courtesy of our newest inductee, I foresee our scheme progressing effortlessly. All that remains is narrowing down the list of candidates. Sister Audra, I charge you to facilitate this matter. Your persuasive talent has proven most useful. Brother Danilov will assist you. This is my will. Blessings of the Crux Ansata on you all.
The eye in the radio dial suddenly dimmed, and across the room, the golden pianist came to life once more. This time it began playing a rather sentimental rendition of Liebestraum. Realizing that the meeting had been adjourned, Desmond gathered up his book, which was huge in his little arms. With a sigh, he hopped down off of the sofa and scowled.
And another thing, just so we're clear, I'm not about to be roped into whatever madness you two are plotting.
Audra beamed, unable to suppress a wicked grin.
Don't worry. If we need a well-read midget, we'll be sure to get in touch.
Desmond huffed and rounded his tiny shoulders. He exited the chamber without another word. Danilov stood and threw his cloak around his shoulders. He looked down at Audra with a look of pure resignation.
So it appears as though we're working together now. I suppose we'll have to make the best of it. Perhaps you'd like to accompany me up to the bridge. I don't trust those tin cans up there to land this thing without killing us all.
The fog had begun to descend on the abandoned airfield that sat slowly decomposing next to the sluggish waters of the bay. A towering hangar, which had been forgotten since the Second World War, loomed as the fog swallowed it whole. The droning sound of the Epyron's engines emanated from the center of the drifting mist as it descended. A resounding crack echoed across the deserted waterfront as the hangar doors parted. A sliver of bright light cut through the wall of fog and grew steadily broader, slowly revealing the hangar's interior, which was bustling with activity. The Epyron continued to descend until it managed to hover just above the ground. The airship seemed dwarfed next to the enormity of the yawning hangar. A squad of 2 blank-faced brass Shawapti advanced out of the hangar and split into 2 single-file lines that lumbered down on either side of the airship's undercarriage. Several tow cables were dropped from the Epyron, and the Shawapti all stooped in unison to collect them. A slow, efficient procession began as the Shawapti guided the Epyron safely inside the cavernous space. When the moorings were securely anchored, the drone of the engine ceased. A large hatch in the airship's bulwark opened, and a gangway lowered into place. A meager landing party of 2 descended the stairwell. Audra in the lead with her white mink swathed around her, and then Danilov appeared a few steps behind. He carried a brass Victrola horn under his arm and a large spool of cable that uncoiled as he walked. From the opposite end of the hangar, a tall, bronze-skinned man approached wearing a long welder's apron. His dark, piercing eyes scanned over Audra as he reached out to air-kiss her on both cheeks.
Lovely as always, my dear. You seem to be holding up nicely.
Audra batted her enormous lashes and smiled. She patted the top of her head lovingly.
Merci, ma chère Mortmain. Yes, these last ones sunk in nice and deep. I don't think they are going anywhere anytime soon.
Good thing. I don't think you have any extra skin left anyway.
Their mutual merriment was doused when Danilov came into view.
You always did have an interest in antiquities, didn't you, Mortmain? But can't you spot an old fraud when you see one?
Audra's eyes narrowed for a moment, then she beamed with approval.
Ah, there, you see? I knew you had it in you. We'll make a Derwinter out of you yet.
Mortmain turned and led the group deeper into the hangar towards his work area. There was a loud clunk from the direction of the airship as a ramp was lowered. A long procession of the stored vehicles began to disembark, each with a pair of glowing eyes behind the steering wheel. The Shawapti drove to the far end of the hangar in single file and then began parking the vehicles in neat, efficient rows. The engines all shut off at once, and each of the gleaming brass drivers exited its particular vehicle and formed a line, standing rigidly at attention. Mortmain smiled while he called out to them.
A job well done, my brothers. Rest now, till we call you.
The row of Shawapti relaxed and fell into a loose cluster in the distance. Audra's eyes lit up at once.
You can command them. Can anyone do this?
Mortmain smiled.
Well, not just anyone. You have to have the natural inclination, so I'm sure you'd be a dab hand at it.
While Audra's face brightened with the possibilities, Mortmain turned her attention back towards his work area. He led the way through piles of scrap metal and welding equipment. It looked like a graveyard of gutted and dismantled tanks. Mortmain turned to a large panel of controls and flicked a few switches, bringing several tracks of overhead lighting to life. In the center of the pool of illumination, a colossal solitary figure was seated on what appeared to be a throne. The onlookers all gaped at the sight. Before them was a finely wrought suit of gleaming black armor, which had to be at least 8 feet high if it was standing. On its lowered head, it wore a jangled crown comprised of tangled wires, filaments, and circuits. The elaborate scales of the lustrous armor were so intricate that its limbs were able to rest in an eerily lifelike pose. In the distance, several other suits of armor were propped up on stands. They were of similar design, but looked much bulkier and hulking with cruder features, like a row of sturdy bodyguards that were made solely for battle. Similar to the Shawapti, each bore the same inscribed sigil on their chests. The Ankh, the circle of hieroglyphs, and the red five-pointed star. Any observant members of the party might have noticed here that this particular inscription was definitely absent on the seated figure. The Victrola horn under Danilov's arm suddenly crackled to life with the voice of Anaximander.
Brother Mortmain, please inform us of your progress.
Mortmain seemed very pleased with himself.
Yes, Maestro, I think you'll be very happy with recent developments. I've made you a portable hub. From there, you'll be able to transfer into the armor suit and back again at will. And the good news is that now the process is completely wireless. A remarkable improvement. Here, let me demonstrate.
Mortmain reached over and removed the Victrola horn from Danilov's grasp. With a firm twist, the cable detached, revealing a live connection that sparked with crackling energy. Mortmain sauntered towards a large glass tube, which was fixed to a strange apparatus, a sort of golden circuit board forged with arcane symbols. Mortmain reached down and connected the cable to the base of the tube. An odd reverberation rang out as the circuits energized. In a flash, the tube was filled with a radiant, sparking vapor of blue-green energy. Mortmain flicked a sequence of switches, and the brilliant energy in the tube erupted and arced across the air to where it tangled itself in the jagged prongs of the colossal Black Knight's crown. the empty eye sockets in the helmet suddenly burst with white-hot light, then gradually cooled to blue-green. A shudder ran through the towering heavy body. The helmet stirred and tentatively turned as if testing its new joints. The melted remains of the twisted wire crown fell to the floor. In one fluid motion, the figure stood. The sound of its finely wrought joints and limbs moving together was surprisingly delicate, almost musical. Anaximander flexed his arms and extended his finely jointed fingers. He raised a hand, and a ball of blue-green flames erupted from his outstretched palm and hovered, blazing and rotating.
Yes, I think this will do nicely. Shame about the crown, though.
Mortmain beamed and looked a little smug. He stepped aside, revealing a large container full of replacements.
I'm afraid they're only good for one use right now, but I'm working on it.
Artifice is not our concern.
Anaximander closed his hand into a fist, and the flame was instantly extinguished. He pointed in the direction of the inert suits of armor in the distance and uttered a hissing phrase. A surge of force expanded from his outstretched hand towards the row of hulking bodyguards. The sigil on each of the distant figures' chests illuminated. Each star suddenly burned with energy, and as if flicking a single switch, a blue-green light glowed behind the eye sockets of each roughly hewn face. Anaximander raised his hand and spoke a single word. Again, the surge of power bolted across the room. Each of the hulking figures stood upright and snapped to attention.
Excellent.
Headlights suddenly illuminated the scene. A black limousine appeared through the hangar doors and came to a stop just outside of the circle of onlookers. The menacing row of hulking Shawaptis seemed to tense and crouch in unmistakably defensive poses. Anaximander raised his hand, and their postures relaxed instantly.
Peace, my brethren. Anaximander
spoke the phrase of dismissal, and with a single gesture, the row of standing giants slumped back on their stands. The lights in each of their eyes dimmed and winked out in unison with a tiny flicker. The driver of the limousine exited and rushed around to open the rear door. A large man with oily, slicked back hair and an expensive pinstripe suit stood up from the back of the limo. Ever the seasoned gold digger, Audra's eyes flickered with interest. The man positively reeked of wealth, a subtle scent that even vaunted her most highly prized nuances, an intoxicating bouquet of ill-gotten gains and filthy lucre. And while Audra quivered with intrigue, all remaining heads turned in the man's direction while Anaximander spoke.
Our new benefactor has arrived at last. May I introduce our most recent inductee, Brother Randolph Sutton.
Chapter 4 comes to a close. Music on the program provided by freesound.org and at comptech.com. I'd like to thank Random Coil UK for their cover of Satie's Nacien No. 1. For more information, please check out the Latchkey Tales fan page on Facebook. Please stay tuned for Chapter 5, and until then, this is MJ Hahn saying goodbye for now, and thanks for listening.